Welcome to Threads of Enlightenment. And as usual, once we have our guest presents, I love this part because I want to welcome them here and to express the honor and gratitude as one who hosts this conversation that they are here of giving us of their time, of their energy, of their journey, so that you and I can learn to become the better human spirits while we occupy this beautiful place called Earth. Because we know at one point in time, we will change form. But while we're here, we want to gather as much wisdom and life to learn to live so we can enjoy this time here. Jem, I want to thank you for coming to Threads of Enlightenment, sir. Thank you so much.
Wow, Ken, what a really beautiful, honorable, integral welcome that really was. You know, I have lots of conversations with lots of beautiful people around the world, and I get interviewed on a lot of podcasts, man, and that welcome was really, really special. So thank you, brother. I'm really excited about this conversation. When I first came across your podcast and the work that you do, mm-hmm. I was drawn to it. I was really hoping that you would invite me on. You know, I saw what you do and I looked into it and I read about you and your message, and I was like, wow, I really hope Ken feels to have me on his show. And you did, and here I am. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad, man. I know I had a delay, but I am glad that you're here to honor us with your energy, your wisdom, your knowledge, the information that you have gathered in your journey and through your journey and your life so far. So yeah, I'm excited about this conversation and this exchange of, as I say, of power and energy. Jem, I want you to tell them the things that you have created, because I know you do have a lot. And I tell people that the thing about a creator is that once that creator has been awoken, the things that you will mention to them today, Jem, will be different 6 months from now. Because a creator is constantly creating, because the energy is constant, and the commission that we have or has been given is movement. And so I want you to tell them what you have right now.
yeah, absolutely. And, you know, at listening to you describe what it is to be a creator, you know, it resonates for me through my recollection of my whole life. You know, I've always just had this burning desire inside of me to express and create. And, you know, one of the mediums for this for me has been as a singer-songwriter since I was a child. I've been writing songs and poetry, and that became my therapy. You know, whenever I was struggling or feeling something really strongly, or when I was ecstatic or overjoyed through the years in my life, it came out in song. You know, that was just, it came out. So I've always been a creator, and now, you know, at this age where I'm at now, and, you know, I'm turning 51 this year, and my children are becoming adults. My eldest boy just turned 18 2 weeks ago, and, you know, there's four teenagers, and they're all growing up very quickly. And so now I'm in a stage of my life, and I don't know whether you looked back over some of the bio, but I've lived a very colorful alternative life. So I haven't lived a mainstream life, and we can talk about that later if you want to. But
oh yeah, we will.
So where I'm at now as a creator, and, you know, so whether it's an online course in personal resilience, and funnily enough, the timing on that piece of creation came. I created this online course in personal resilience just before COVID came, before the pandemic came, and I released it, launched it, and then the very next month came the pandemic. And so this course in personal resilience served way more than I thought it would. And so it's been endorsed here in Australia by some governing bodies and blah, blah, blah. So that's one piece. And then I work as a leadership coach, helping create more conscious leaders and then healthier organizational culture, because I love people. I love humans, and I want us to get along and function well together and solve the problems together. So I work as a coach there. I created a series of retreats, conscious leadership retreats that I run in the Himalaya in remote North India, in a small village that I've been a member of for 25 years, and we go very remotely and off the grid. That's mm-hmm. a beautiful program.
Nice.
I created a retreat for women in Bali in Indonesia, which I've been running for 9 years until restrictions, mm-hmm. And also a men's retreat, a meditation retreat in the desert in Northern Australia, which is also very beautiful. And then, you know, like most recently, I'm building something with a team in America, and we're building the Modern Leaders Communication Mastermind, which mm-hmm. is super exciting because I'm having conversations with wonderful people around the world putting this together. And yeah, so much stuff, man. There's a lot of stuff. Oh, the book. I just wrote a book as well. Sorry, I just wrote a book. And that's really exciting. And the next book, actually, a friend of mine is a filmmaker, and the idea that I've got for the next book, he's so wrapped with that we're going to shoot the documentary as we travel around the world and interview people for this anthology book that's going to be 2023. So, yeah, there's a lot going on.
That's awesome. Man, that's awesome. That's a creative, folks. A lot of those things and those tools and products that you mentioned have come out of your journey. So let's go back. Jim, and talk about your journey. I tell people that we are born in this hospital, chaotic scene from the get-go. It's just chaos. And then mom and dad kissed us, brought us to bring us home. And I tell them, home to me, Jim, is the lab. It is what we call it, home. So we're here with scientists that really don't know much. They are working on some thesis. Some old theses that they've had from generations to generation given to them. And so they have this brand new canvas that they just kissed. And the first place they put us into is a jail that is called a crib. And so here we already started with the programming, because the programming, that child, every single baby that you've ever met in your life, is trying to get out of that cage. So talk to me about your family unit as to what it looked like, how were your parents, and some of the belief system that you remember that you started incorporating into your being.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to preface what I'm about to say by starting with, it all comes from my perspective. All the trauma, all the lab, that everything comes from a place of love, a lot of ignorance as well, but trying their best. And I also want to say that my relationship with my father is completely resolved. He passed 12 years ago, and he was a big player in my trauma as a child. Mm-hmm. And with the benefit of hindsight and retrospect, I can look back now and understand that he really didn't know how to be any other way than he was. And so I have complete love for him. And then the story begins, right? Yeah. So I was the eldest of four kids in the end. I was born in Holland. Dad was from Leeds in Yorkshire in England, and Mum was a few generations Australian going back to Ireland. I was born in Holland, 1 year in England, and then we moved out to a new suburb in the city of Melbourne in Australia. Mm. And I had the standard privileged middle-class white suburban life, right, from the outside. But my relationship with my father was tortured. And I look back now, and my rebellion against the system in my teenage years, I was, you know, shaving mohawks and piercing my ear and wearing punk clothing and covering myself in jewelry. And I was really trying to be everything to be not my dad. I just did not want to be him.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I could leave, as soon as I finished school and I was 18, I was off to the other side of the world. And I really was anti-establishment. You know, before we came on air, you and I were talking about this glass container that we get put in, and it's called normal. I smashed through that right out the other side.
Yeah.
And I was extreme. I really was a reaction to not wanting to be in this container. And so I've lived quite extreme chapters in my life. And I look back now, and it was a reaction to that father-son relationship, and that took years to heal, you know. And yeah. In fact, my turning from the age of innocence, when I was up to 5 years old and I was innocent and believed I was good enough. And then when I was six, my father lost his temper with me and physically beat me up. And that was the time that I first lost my innocence. That's when the trauma set in, the trauma of mm-hmm. being born in the lab. And I was born in the sack. You know when yeah. they say you're born in yeah. the sack? Yeah. So that yeah. was the first trauma, right? Getting yeah. cut out of the sack. And then, yeah. And then, so this age of six, and then I started to develop, and I didn't know this, Ken. I had no idea mm-hmm. what I was doing, but I started to develop yeah. a belief that I wasn't enough, that yeah. I wasn't good enough. And this fostered through my life, and then I manifested this evidence all around me to back up my belief that I wasn't good enough. And it wasn't until my beautiful midlife crisis slash awakening yeah. in my early 40s where I lost everything but found yeah. everything. Found everything yeah. and found yourself. Myself.
Yeah. yeah. You've said so much, Jan, because I think the reasons and all of our parents, I believe, you know, they're exceptions to that. They are trying with the best. And again, I frame it with the trauma from the perspective by which they interpret that they're doing right. And it's all yeah. about perspective, man.
Yeah,
I tell
yeah,
people
yeah.
everything is simply a shift of your perspective. Every time you're in something, if you focus on the negative aspects of it, you will pull the energy that represents that sphere. If
Completely.
You focus on the other, focus on answers, because like
Completely.
I said, we're greater than all of those things. The
yeah.
If we begin to pull the information that is within, that is so deep that it takes a dark time to bring it out. You yeah. and I do not create when everything is beautiful. It takes
yeah.
a dark time for us to then go in, look inside, get in introspective, and begin
yeah.
to move aside compartments that we have locked and so forth. And as we begin to investigate those places is where we find answers, Jim. And I believe
yeah.
our parents are here to start us on this journey. I think it's the inception of it. But we don't understand that until much later, when
yeah.
we have learned to love the self, when we've learned to walk the walk, as they say, and then we look
yeah.
at our parents from a totally different space, because we understand that, man, they did the best that they know.
Yeah.
They didn't
yeah, yeah,
know
they didn't
anything
know any,
else.
They didn't know
and,
any better.
And you
yeah.
know what? It I turned out okay. I'm okay, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was horrible back then, but now in retrospect, they did damn good. And now
yeah.
I am able to be this individual that is a seeker, that digs deep within myself. And most of it, I believe, Jim, started back in the lab, but we don't recognize it until
uh-huh.
much later in our life, man.
Yeah, it's so true. And I know you also feel this as well, that the work really begins with the relationship with self, yeah?
Oh, and, that's the beginning of it.
It has to begin
yeah.
there, you know, because we experience this whole thing vibrationally and then perceptually we experience the whole thing in our mind,
yeah.
in our body and mind, which is of the same thing, but vibrationally, yeah. but then perceptually in our mind. And so the quality of our mind matters. And the quality
oh, yeah.
of our mind is our relationship with self. And our relationship with self is our relationship with the past, which is all the trauma
yeah.
you're talking about. And so the less okay we are with our relationship with self slash past, then the
mm-hmm.
more kind of white noise there is internally in
yes.
our body mind, you know, the more disturbance in the force there is. And,
yeah.
and when there's white noise and disturbance in the force, then there's too many filters for me to be able to clearly see you. You know, but
yeah.
when I can resolve my relationship with self, and when I
yes.
can smooth out all the creases, it becomes quiet. And when it's quiet,
yes.
I can see you more clearly. I can
yeah,
connect
you can
with you
me.
More clearly. I
yeah.
can hear you. I can love
yep.
you. I can serve better.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I think we both
isn't
feel
it,
that, right?
Yeah. Isn't it funny, though? And as I interview people, and I always listen for the entrance of the trauma and the age of it that guide us for many years in our lives. And what we do with the trauma is once we receive it, we morph it, we clean it up in a way that we make it acceptable for us, but yet it guides our life, our behavior, everything, how we relate to people, how we relate to ourselves, everything, because I remember mine at a young age as well, and it governed my entire life until I was in my late 20s that I had to come to grips with. I had to have a conversation with Ken Primus from a different space as I began to learn about who I am and what took place. So it was really interesting that you actually pinpointed it to that time and how it governed your life and how your perception was that you weren't good enough. And so talk to me about that, Jen, because that piece is a lot of people walking around with that part of luggage in their baggage compartment.
Yeah.
Of not feeling.
Yeah, so many
talk
people.
To me,
you know,
talk to them.
Yeah, it's interesting because when we start to contemplate and explore our trauma and our suffering, mm-hmm. we can feel very alone.
Yeah.
You know, we feel like I'm the only one going through this, you know, and then we realize that, wow, I'm human and there's human macro behavioral patterns that apply to all humans. And this fear and then this, for some of us, belief that what if I'm not enough? What if I'm not good enough? Yeah. Which comes from early childhood. It's a survival fear.
Yeah.
What if I'm not enough for my parents to love me and provide for me and raise me, etc.? And it becomes this fear. And so then we have things like imposter syndrome. You know, when someone gets very successful, they're kind of waiting for someone to knock on the door and say, you're not good enough for all this success. We're taking it away from you. This is common. People feel this, you know, and self-sabotage when we start to become successful in something and we sabotage it. And that's because we don't believe that we're worthy of success and abundance and love and happiness, right? So then I realized, wow, it's not just me. There's lots of us. So I'm not as special as I thought I was. I used to think I was a special, tortured individual, you know? And it's like, oh, no, I'm just one of the collective beautiful vibration of messiness, you know? I'm not that special.
Yeah, because I had the similar thing. I mean, it took me a year to deal with my worthiness. And I remember when I started the journey on it, I knew that I was beginning it because I purposely began it. You know, I began to focus on it and look inside. And so I put it down. It took me 1 year. And I tell people that personal growth is not for lazy people or people that don't want to challenge. This is probably some of the hardest work you'll ever do in your life because you have to face the darkness. The darkness is you. Once you face it, you will fall in love with that person to a degree you would not believe. I used to walk around, Gemma, kissing my hand, like, I just love my house. You know, people would look at me like it was crazy, man. And as I began this journey and realized that I was not perfect, but I knew that I wanted to be better and I was going to learn to be better, how to be a better human spirit. And that journey alone, Jim, got me excited about living. And that's the piece that I want to tell the people. Talk to us about that, because as we said on the onset, I believe that life tries to get to us, but because we are not a species or we're not taught that one should live in a state of awareness. We are not taught that. The collective does not want us to even know about that. So what happened, because I know it's a series of things that have I always tell people it's like Bolero. It starts at really, really quiet, and then it builds up after years, and then boom, all the symbols come in, and you find yourself in a situation. Talk to us about your situation, Jim? How it got
Yeah, it's interesting for me. There was a year as well. Now I'm jumping a bit towards the end of the story of the question you've asked me, but when I consciously decided to change my belief and to convince myself that I am enough. Yeah. Of course I'm enough. I'm completely enough to be me. I shouldn't be more like anybody else because I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm me, right? But when before that work began, I've been lucky enough in my life to have two somewhat death of egos, identity crises, you know, and I had one when I was 28. I'd been living in London and I had identified with the things around me, and we get these glimpses of enlightenment, we get these glimpses of awareness, but the system that we're in, like you're saying, is so designed by the collective to keep us eyes closed, right? The system works when we're not aware. The system works when our eyes are closed. And our ego, our sense of identity, when we identify with our thoughts and our emotions and our beliefs and our ideologies, we identify with whether we think you should be vaccinated or not, for crying out loud. And people form a sense of identity around this belief and then fight over it. So we're all quite blind, mostly, I got these little glimpses of awareness, but then you go back into being blind again because you're in the system, right? And so then when I was 28, I had a death of ego, didn't know who I was, and I walked around India for a year barefoot, and I grew a very long beard and long dreadlocks, and I dressed in very simple clothes, a piece of material wrapped around me called a lungi and an old dirty T-shirt. And I had very few belongings, and I disappeared into the fabric of a country that would assimilate me in as what they would call a holy man seeking enlightenment.
Yeah.
For me, I was just a stinky hippie with a guitar hiding out in the jungle, right? But that year was actually a stunning year. For me, it was prior to being a father, and it was a stunning year of awareness, of opening. But then what happened is I became a father, and I had to, and I thought, right, I've got to provide. So now I'm going to go and play this game that I've avoided for so long. So I put on a suit and a tie for the first time in my life. And I went into the thing, and I did the thing, right? Because I thought I had to provide for these kids, and I got lost again. I became closed again. And so then fast forward to my midlife awakening, and it came from a very prophetic North American Indian sweat lodge evening where I had an out-of-body experience and then a very deep dream. And then I woke up and then I realized that I'd been thinking I wasn't enough, and I went to work on myself. And as I spent this year, and like you said, personal development is not for people who are lazy. You know, go and have an aha moment, but you've got to back that up with relentless, consistent, roll your sleeves up work, man. Yeah. And I went to work on myself every single day, you know, and you were kissing your hands. I'm standing in front of the mirror looking at myself saying, dude, I love you. I love you. I love you, right? If someone walked into my bathroom, they'd go, oh, my God, this guy's crazy, right? But I was rewiring. Yeah. I was doing it on purpose.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. And so as I started to do this, and then I had to lose everything, I had to have the catharsis. So I lost my career, I lost my marriage, I lost my house. I kept my kids, thankfully. I kept my kids 50-50. So I've had my boys week on, week off. So I had $100,000 of debt, no belongings. Yeah. I had one guitar and one surfboard and my two children, and I started all over again in my 40s. But I started by rewiring this relationship vibrationally with self and really, really consistently. And it's become a habitual practice. I practice it every single day.
It is.
I do
every
my
day.
Affirmations
every
and my self-love every single day.
Every
and I'll do
day.
It forever, every single day, you know.
Yeah.
And that's when my life, that's when everything else changes, right? Because you change this relationship in here and your perspective shifts so beautifully that you start to attract wonderful, wonderful stuff in your life. And my beautiful other half, my gorgeous woman, our relationship is so conscious. Our four teenagers, you know, the work that I do, which is complete, an act of service. I'm here to serve, and I get to serve and still feed my children by serving. I mean, that's just what a gift. So there's the answer to your question. That was a bit long, sorry.
But Jim, the programmers don't want us to know that we can provide for our family. Even if we do the thing that is right about experiencing the journey about ourselves and stuff like that, and that the supply and support for our family will come out of that. They want us to depend on them so that we will not unhook. And so they will never tell anyone that you can go on that journey that you described and still pay for your family and provide for your family. Because I had the same problem. I put on the suit and I went back into the system and stayed in there because I felt this call to do the things that I'm doing right now when I was younger. And yeah. I said, no, I can't do it because I have my kids. And as a result of that, I had a similar journey as yours. I lost everything. And then you have to start looking at yourself and go, wait a minute, you know, what is my belief system? But I think what happens to us at that awakening, the beginning of our conversation with ourselves, is that, and I've said this a million times to people who listen to my podcast, a creator will never show up when everything is doing great. There's no need for the creator to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
You're on vacation. You're having a good time.
Yeah,
I use this example. I use this example because I came out of the church. God, as a creator, after he created everything, Jim, he went on vacation. He said, I got to take a break. He said, he rested on the 7 days. He's like, look, I'm out.
that was hard work, man. So, I need a break.
Yeah. And so I tell people, it's the same with us. The creator in us will never show up until it's dark. Because when it was dark, it says he showed up. He looked at this darkness. But the art in creating, I tell people, if you want to manifest your stuff quickly, you must be specific. God looked into darkness and he said, I need light.
Yeah.
So let there be. And so he spoke to the thing that he desired.
Yeah.
And you and I have to do the very same thing. You got to talk to that thing. And I always tell people to locate your statement of faith, the thing that will drive you when you're tired, when you're exhausted.
Yeah.
What is it that you're saying to you? What words are you encouraging yourself with? Like you said, I'd walk around. My friends, my kids would look at me. I'd be in the middle of the street having a conversation with someone on buying something and just stop. The thought would come to me like, because I suffered guilt, a lot of guilt. And I would look and stop and say, my God, can I just, and then I would go back and have the conversation because a thought about the guilt would come back in and I would arrest it by just going, no, I love you. I love you, man.
Beautiful.
You know? And so
unconditional love for self.
Isn't it? It is such a beautiful journey, man. I don't know how to say it to those that are not on it or afraid of it. And I think the society, they keep us busy, you know, with information that feeds to the ego.
Yeah. And not there's something when I'm having a conversation with people who are resistant to this radical self-acceptance, self-love, self-okayness, I say, well, let's come back to reality for a sec, right? Let's talk about reality. So if we took a freeze frame of this moment right now, if we took a snapshot of this moment, I can tell you 100% you are exactly who you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right? Every little part of you, every bit and bob, every perfect imperfection, every imperfect perfection, every part of you, every ingredient, everything you've ever experienced, every story you ever made up, everything that ever happened, in this moment, in this freeze frame, you are exactly who you're supposed to be. Now, how do I know this? Well, apparently, because reality told me there you are. So you must be meant to be this because there you are, right? And there's a wonderful woman, Byron Katie, and she, I don't know if you've heard of Byron Katie and her book, Loving What Is, and she says, you can argue with reality if you want to, but reality will win only 100% of the time, right? So you must be exactly enough of everything to be who you are, and you shouldn't be more like anyone else because you're not.
No.
You're not anyone else. You're you. So this is a way that I find people can come into reality and go, wow, I must be meant to be just like this right now. Now, I just want to say, Ken, this is not saying that you might not have the urge to evolve or improve or grow through your life and learn from your hardships and struggles and trauma and then hopefully get better at things in the future. I'm not talking about the past or the future. I'm talking about reality, which is the present moment. Yeah. And you are exactly enough right now, you know. So once we can accept reality and just go, well, apparently I'm enough, now I'm going to get to work on this persistent ego and this persistent neurology that's been indoctrinated into me as I was born into this lab, as you call it, and then everything that was indoctrinated. So I've got a lot of stuff to work against. I've got a lot of neural wiring that I need to smooth out and replace with this functional sense of I am completely enough just the way I am. I love myself unconditionally and I have radical self-acceptance, complete, not 90% self-acceptance, complete 100%, you know, and then when it comes, like I said before, then when it becomes quiet because the love is calm, then I can go and serve and make it about everybody else and not make it about me anymore, you know?
Yeah. I try to, in my conversations, I try to bring people to the awareness of the how precious and special and they are. And I always use, when I was going through my journey, I'd always say, I am one of a kind. I am an endangered species. And then I would go into that and explain, because I am an endangered species, I ought to be. That alone has given me the right to be kind to myself.
Yeah.
That alone has given me the right to love myself.
Yeah.
That alone has given me the right to respect myself because I am so precious that I am different from you, that they have, people hear me talk about it, they have industries that are set up and making billions on the fact that we are that different. Fingerprints.
Yeah. Yeah.
Facial recognition.
Yeah.
A retina thing. I am so different from everyone else that when I die, my fingerprint is off of this universe.
Yeah, isn't that incredible?
It's gone.
Absolutely incredible.
Incredible and powerful when you stop the noise, the TV, when you, I believe the gift that we are called to receive for the beginning of the journey, Jen, is quietness. Mm. I believe. We're drawn to the quietness. And in my book, I talk about solitude, the power of quietness, because all the books that I've ever read about the sages and miracle people and all of the I Ching, the Vedas, these men and women that did powerful stuff came out from that place of quietness. That's who you learn who you are. You disconnect from the natural realm and walk into the spiritual realm. You get visions. You come out with dreams. You come out with things that you will not have until you quiet yourself, you know. And that's one of the gifts for the beginning of the journey. And 90% of the people are afraid of that space right there.
Yeah, so true. Yeah, that for me anyway, that's truth, what you were just saying then. And, you know, and to people, if anyone's listening and they feel that natural fear of sitting in solitude, sitting in quiet, sitting in that space, my heart is reaching out to you and saying you will be completely fine.
Yeah.
Just sit. And when there's thoughts, neurological firings and they're feeding off that fear and they're you know, trying to upset you and create chaos and noise, just observe it.
Yeah.
Just observe it. Let it be the same way you can observe your heart beating, the same way you can observe your breath, the same way you can observe the sounds you can hear. You can just observe the noise of the thoughts as they go. Just let them be. You know, you can still come into the solitude and the silence like this and you will be okay. Just sit. Yeah, anyway.
It's a beautiful space. It's a space of power. And as I agree with him, I said, you know, go into it, run into that place, because it is a place of power. It's not some place to be afraid of. It is new, and because of the newness of it, you may have some apprehension or some, but it's okay. Just sit there for a minute. Just it'll be all right.
Yeah.
And listen to your breathing. Dance with it and allow that precious moment to engulf in your spirit, man. And you're going to do it every day. And you're going to want, you're going to come to a place that you're going to want more of that than you don't want of the other stuff. So, Jim, I want you to talk to about, you've gotten these boys, you got your awakening and you are moving forward. Talk to me. I know you mentioned piece of it. When you were sitting down with yourself, what were some of those thoughts that you gave permission to become monsters in your life? I'm using that. Talk to me about some of that conversation, some of that awareness that you started to notice, and what tools did you utilize to move you through them?
Yeah, wow. So are you asking me, what are some of the, in my past, some of the thoughts that became monsters that trapped me psychologically?
Yeah.
Is that what you were asking?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow, man, I can tell you that I had a psychological racket that was so consuming for me for so many years, and I was so ashamed, Ken, I did not tell anybody. I pretended to the outside world that I was okay, because my essence of who I thought I had to be as a man was completely destroyed, because I put all of my self-loathing and all of my self-doubt and all of my negative self-stuff, I put it into one place in my life, and that was in my sexual intimacy. Mm-hmm. And I developed in my mind a psychological racket to the point where I was sexually dysfunctional in my marriage.
Wow.
And I was so ashamed I couldn't tell anybody. It's only in the years of my awakening that I've been able to share this. And I share this with people because I hope that I hope someone out there hears it and go, oh, wow, I'm not alone. You know, but that was a terrible racket, and I didn't know how to get out, but I couldn't let go of this one glimmer of hope. I just, I had to believe that it was possible for me to heal myself.
Yeah.
I had to believe that, and I couldn't let that go. And then I had the experience and it was too late for my marriage, unfortunately. And now my ex-wife and I, we're friends. You know, we co-parent, we swap our kids each week. We get along fine. We're friends now. We've resolved. But back in the time, it was very, very hard for us both because we were young and we were unaware. And so then when I realized that at the core of all of this was my self-belief that I wasn't good enough, and that I'd been sabotaging my own happiness.
Yeah.
So that's where I had to start the healing. It was boring. It was repetitive, Ken. It was every day out loud. Yeah. I am enough. I am enough. I am enough. I am enough. Over and over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just was on this mission to rewire. And I didn't even believe it to begin with. I didn't even believe what I was saying, but I'd read these books about through the neuroscience and understanding our neurology and how neurons wire together with repetition. Mm-hmm. So I just went on a mission to repeat. While I was doing that, I also introduced a daily practice of meditation and contemplation. So I meditate for half an hour, 20 minutes to half an hour every morning. I start my day like this.
Yes,
and then my affirmations. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then my affirmations. And so this all started 9 years ago. So it's been 9 years of practice now, and I've just been smoothing out the creases over the last 9 years, and I will continue to do for the rest of my life. You know?
Yeah, I try to point people to meditation, and I try to explain to them that some personalities can handle the classic form of meditation and some cannot. And I try to explain what meditation is. And meditation is the space by which you can disconnect from the natural realm and usher yourself into the space of power, the space of the spiritual realm, the other side. And it is the bridge between the two is simply the breath. Mm. Now, find a place, a routine by which you can achieve that. You're meditating.
Yeah.
Whatever it is for you, I don't know what that is. But you know that space. And I had a woman told me, it was when I went into on my surfboard. I was able to quiet myself. I was able to process. And she was talking about some of her greatest spiritual experience was while she was doing that. Yeah. I had a conversation and a woman talked to me, a mother. That's why I'm saying people have no excuses. A mother, she did it while she was vacuuming.
Yeah.
Of all things.
Yeah.
But to her, she was able to put herself in the space by which she can breathe and walk from one end to the other. So I tell them, Jim, find whatever it is because it is necessary for your personal growth. I'm not going to be dogmatic and say it's the classic form. The classic form works for me. I like it, you know.
Mm.
But even my form, to some people, would look, you know, and said, you're out of form, you know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they're looking for the form, the teachers, that the sages have their foot folded back in their head, and I can't do that stuff.
Yeah,
I'll break my back. I need a chiropractor after that. But
yeah.
I found mine. And so the find yours, Jim.
If you're focused on the form, missing the point.
You're missing the point.
If you're focused on the form, you're stuck in the physical.
Yeah.
It's about experiencing a state of being as consciousness.
Yeah.
So that you are simply as consciousness and that you can be conscious of anything that arises in consciousness, whether it's the breath or a physical sensation or an emotion or a thought, whatever it is, as consciousness. And for me, and I agree with you completely, it's for me, it's a fundamental part of a spiritual practice. And by spiritual, I mean that it's time spent away from identification with everything. So our ego, our sense of identity is knowing itself in relation to form, to thoughts and emotions and physical objects and difference. And, you know, so we're constantly caught in this identification with experience. And for me, meditation is the opportunity to move beyond that.
Yeah. It's a
gift. And that is spiritual. That's the oneness with everything, right?
Yeah. It's a wonderful gift, man, that I think Western civilization, again, it depends on the petri dish by which we are grown. Western civilization doesn't focus on that. But when you go into the Eastern religion and Eastern thinking, it's a part of their system that they're made up and they're open to that, where we have more resistance. And I think it was the hippies that started to bring some freedom into that aspect.
Who's a hippie? Where's the hippie?
Look, man, look at my. I got my.
So nice.
They call me one too. So I get it.
That was the first tattoo I ever made on myself, and I did it with sewing needles in India. Yeah, you've got some tribal link as well.
Yeah, I got a couple all over the place, man. It's
a part of it. We kind of just got.
Yeah, I know. I think, and I tell people those marks mean something as well. When you sit down with someone who's on a spiritual journey, it's not just to be, just to go and have somebody put some things on your skin. They are periods of your life that identify with something that you can look back and have a conversation with and bring someone into the space closer so that they can experience self. So talk to me, Jim, about you. You've gone through this journey. You are now learning about who you are. And I want to now tap into your recollection as to when did you come to rest when it came to the providing peace for your family, because that is a major thing within the mindset of men, number one, but also people that want to provide for their family. When you unhooked, as they say, you took the suit off and you began to pursue something else. When was it that enlightenment, that moment of awakening came to you, says, wait a minute, I don't have to wear the suit. This is my joy. I want to pursue and when that transition took place, and how did it make you feel?
Yeah, I mean, that took place all around this time in my early 40s of the, you know, the midlife change is when all of that took place. And I knew it was possible because I'd met people who were living their path of the heart. They were living in their joy, and money was flowing to them through them in service of their own, you know, God-given talent, so to speak, and the way they were serving and helping others, and money was flowing to them. So I knew it was possible. I just hadn't figured out how to do it. And I also had to unravel my relationship with money because when I was younger and I was anti-establishment, I put money in that basket too. I said money is the root of all evil, and you know, you've got to be a horrible person to get rich, and you've got to be mean and blah, 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 all this stuff that I made up around money. So I had to undo that relationship as well, which I did, actively, consciously rewiring my relationship with money. And so then I had to have the courage, and it took a lot of courage. When I lost my job, I went from earning lots of money, getting paid by the man in a suit and tie, getting paid a lot of money, and then I got turfed out. And my friends and family said, go and get another job. You've got two young children. Yeah. You're building a house now. You've committed financially. You need to go and get another job. And I said, no, no, I don't. I need to follow my heart. I need to follow my calling. Yeah. And to follow my calling and start my coaching practice from scratch, that meant that I had to lose my house to do that. But that's what I was prepared to do. If I could have gone and got another job and kept everything we'd built, but I couldn't, that wasn't being true to myself. I couldn't live that lie. I had the midlife crisis. I had to do this and I still had to feed my children. So I had to make it work, but I had to sell the house to do that. And I ended up with all the debt that I was talking about, but I couldn't give up, man. I didn't feel like I had a choice in giving up. I still am so vibrating with, this is me and this is what I'm here to do. This is my mission. This is my purpose. And that's the fuel in my tank, and that's my North Star. And I've got these children to provide for, and that's my identification as the archetype of provider. So I feel like I've got some kind of human archetype that I can relate to. But from a spiritual point of view, I know why I'm here, man, and I'm not going to I have to be that. I have to do that. You know, it's just that clear. So people say, wow, it must have been really scary and it must have taken a lot of courage. And it was. And I would have sleepless nights where I had no money and I didn't know where I was going to buy food for the kids. And it was that scary. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't pay my debts, and it was scary. But I didn't have a choice. I had to go on this path, you know.
Yeah. Isn't it? Yeah.
And now, sorry, just so for your listeners, so that they know where I've got to. And I believed that abundance was possible following the path of my heart, and I just didn't give up. And so now, just in recent years, I feel so blessed, man. I've got abundance. There's wealth and money coming from every direction, and all I'm focused on is creating and helping people. You know, so I do feel very lucky.
That's the place of everyone should be there. Every one of us should be there and should be striving to get to that place, striving in the sense of this, getting to know who you are. Yeah. That is that's the striving that you need, because once you begin to learn about your preciousness, the power that is you, you can and will call money to you. You will call, and I love how you put it, Jem, is financial stuff, money is a relationship. And people don't understand that it is a relationship. And many of them, the reason why the money is not theirs, because they haven't worked on the relationship. Yeah. That is a vital part in achieving and not achieving, in drawing that energy to you. You have to fix it, because if it's broken, it is not shooting on 100% cylinder. It's broken. But if you fix it, and now when you lose it, when you lose the energy to that, it will pull everything to you. And as I mentioned to Jem, I believe we are energy. Our body houses that. and our words are, it releases it, and it calls energy, which is other people and circumstances, yeah, to manifest in your life so that, yeah, you can get what you want. So,
yeah,
here you are, Jim, you began to, you saw the need, and it is a great place to be, because when you are at this place, and I tell people, when you're at this place, you're not working.
No.
You're not working at all. It's not the, you're not working. That's all I could say.
No, that's right. It's, no, it's not work.
It's a place of joy. You're excited all
you're
the
living.
Time.
Yeah, yeah, I feel like I'm just living.
Yeah,
living my
work.
Best life, you know, and
yes,
living and loving, you know, and serving, yeah, living, loving and serving. I wake up every day excited and grateful. I really, yeah, do. And, you know, gratitude is another thing that I created
absolutely
a habit on. You know, I wasn't born grateful. I understood, yeah, as we do, that gratitude is a wonderful hack to happiness.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
And so I made a practice every morning: meditate, affirmations, yeah, gratitude, meditate, yeah, affirmations, gratitude, every day, like discipline. Yeah. And now gratitude is a habitual thought for me. I'm tripping, yes, over gratitude, and my friends and family just kind of shake their heads going, oh, Jamie's grateful for everything. And I am. I really am so grateful for everything.
I know. You know? It's a wave of magnet that I tell people, that when you practice habitual confession and saying things and releasing energy, it is a perpetual wave that is rolling all the time. And if you understand friction and all of these things and magnetism, it goes and it'll pull that, because by the time when it gets there, it has so much momentum going towards the people that it just bam and brings them to you so quickly. And I tell people, if you want to achieve things, as you said, if you want to hack it, be grateful and be consistent, because it is a momentum that is sent forth. And when it, yeah, hits the people, and that's when you'll see that it happens so quickly that you go, wow. And is because you put in the time and the work, the things that are necessary,
yeah,
the morning, yeah, every day. Jim, I want you to talk to them about when you decide to, when you're coaching, you talked about it, your workshop. And I know it's things that flows from one to another. Talk about some of those times when you decided, I need to move from this space now, from the coaching, the workshop, and as you wanted to get more notice as a teacher to bring more students, because that, again, is releasing energy and causing those things to happen. Talk to me, yeah, about some of those.
Yeah. So the driving energy behind it is that I'm on a mission to make lives easier.
Yeah,
I can't help it. I don't even try to stop, yeah, it. I love it. That's what fuels me. So I'm on a mission, yeah, to help create ease and flow and success in other lives. And so, yeah, that's the drive. And then the circumstance provides, like you said earlier, the circumstance puts us into a position of struggle or challenge, and we have to find, yep, another way.
Yeah,
to keep on our mission, you know. And one example is, well, I mean, one of the struggles for me was capacity. So I was coaching one to one, and mm-hmm, and one to groups, mm-hmm, live, real time. And I could, yeah, I've only got so many hours in the day, and so I, yeah, was full, and I couldn't see any more clients, and I was full, yeah, and I was going, oh, but I want to help more people. How am I going to help more people? Yeah. Right, I've got to get scalable, right?
Yeah.
So I've got to create ways to help more people. So that was the first, yeah, bit. And then I remembered in the June of 2020, so we were, you know, 5 months into lockdown, and in Australia, I don't know about where you are, Ken, but, yeah, we had 2 years of,
I know you guys
really
had it,
full
hard,
on lockdown,
yeah,
right? So I'm sitting on the couch in June of 2020, and all of my work up until then, except for one online course, all of my work had been in real time, face to face, in the room with people, yeah, coaching, teaching, facilitating in the room with people. And mm-hmm. I sat on the couch and I got the government assistance. So I thought, okay, that's all right. I can feed the kids. And I heard myself thinking, I'll just ride this out. I'll just kick back on the yeah. couch and ride this out. And in a few months' time, when the pandemic's mm-hmm. gone, I'll get back out there and on my mission again. And as soon yeah. as I had that thought, I caught that thought and I went, yeah. whoa, Jem, that's not going to work, man.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
way of thinking ain't going to fly. Yeah. You've got to figure out how to get relevant now. People need yeah. you now more than ever before. Yeah. People need you now. So then I sat on the couch and I went, right, create, create, create. How can I yeah. help people? How can I serve from lockdown, from my living room?
Yeah.
And I doubled my business in the first financial yeah. year of lockdowns, and I'm set to double it again in this financial year.
Wow. You hit, Gemma, on a principle that I try to make people aware of. The process of accepting a thought. The thought comes. I mean, thought comes. And I love the way you said it because it's that quick and it is that powerful, the exchange. You had that thought. It came to you. You're going to ride it out. And then there is this break that you have to decide. You have to either accept the thought or reject the thought. And I tell people, I teach them this, Jeff. Take no thought. This is actually what Jesus told his disciples. Take no thought saying. And I remember when I read that, it flipped me out because it just jumped into me and I got it. Take no thought by agreeing to it. Don't agree yeah. with it. If you yeah. agree with it, it is yeah. yours.
Yeah, then you're signing yours, a contract with it. Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly. An agreement. Yeah. You're signing a contract. You have an agreement, a yeah. final agreement. And then you will lay there. You will start to agree with it by the actions that you will be doing. You'll come and lay on the couch. And yeah. you won't even know that you're doing this because
you and it becomes your reality.
And it becomes your reality. And I tell them, you do not have to agree with the thought. You can disagree and yeah. change it.
Yeah, completely. And so 100%.
It is one powerful lesson that I wish that people that are listening to us would take with them. Jem, I want to thank you for coming, man. We could talk forever. Talking 57 minutes, and I just want to thank you for coming by Threads of Enlightenment because this is some good stuff, man. I really appreciate you coming by.
Yeah, Ken, I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation and hanging out with you, brother, and thank you so much for having me on your show.
Thank you, sir.